his back straight against the wind and water seeping through his hair. He was a tall, lean, stoic figure, and made no outward movement to betray the tension in his gut. Only his eyes shifted constantly to the clock on the Balmoral Hotel above Waverley Station. It read 1:56 in the morning, but Timanthes knew it was customary to keep this clock running 3 minutes fast to ensure travellers did not miss their trains. So there were still 7 minutes until the appointed hour. He held his face to the rain and cursed softly. Despite the inclement weather, he wore a short-sleeved tunic under a bronze corselet. On his hip was a sword sheathed in horn, and from his shoulders hung a cloak of fine wool, held in place by a Star of Macedon clasp. Behind him his troops squatted in silence and steeled themselves with skins of wine, their cloaks wrapped around them, and their circular hoplon shields strapped to their backs. It had been a typically hard Scottish winter, and so, when the previous afternoon's sunshine brought a promise of spring, the city had cautiously unfurled. But then a fresh deluge arrived at dusk, sluicing the pavements clean of shoppers and stalling rush-hour traffic along the arteries of Leithwalk, Kirstorfin and Queensferry, until headlights trailed through the dark like diamond rosaries. Now the traffic was gone. The residents of Newtown were sealed into their grandeur. The last bars of Leith had detached themselves from their more tenacious customers. The estates of Craigmiller, Nidri and Muirhouse harboured only a handful of youths loitering over their phones. And among the snaking alleys either side of the Royal Mile, just a few itinerant souls scurried on their way. No one looked up into the darkness. No one saw the figures on the roofs above Brodie's Close, or spied the gleam of streetlight on bronze and iron. "My lord, we must go!" Olena, captain of companion bodyguard, stepped to Timanthi's shoulder. "The doorway will be open for no more than 15 minutes. Are the rope runts ready?" "The whelps are all at their stations and briefed for our return." Timanthes nodded his approval and cast a final look along the high street. A lone taxi turned down Coburn, but otherwise the pavements were clear. "Rouse the troops." Olena handed him his helmet, and Timanthes watched as she summoned the companions to attention with a quiet order. As one, they donned helmets, straightened into two ranks, 15 in each. The rain streamed through their horsehair plumes, and their eyes glittered in the dark behind their bronze nasal protectors. It was a critical moment in the blood season. A traitor had spoken of a secret gate leading into tunnels that ran to the heart of the underground refuge of the Titans' main rivals, the Valhalla Horde. Kill the king. If the Titans could gain access to Svein's throne room and take him unawares, it would be a crucial victory before the season's finale, and a night when the fortunes of the Titan Palatinate might finally turn. But Timanthes was an old trooper, made shrewd by hardship and the loss of many friends, and he was uneasy about this opportunity thrown their way so readily. He tugged on his helmet, signalled to Olena, and the two ranks swiveled into columns and followed him between slanting roofs. The Titan hoplites were sure-footed through the puddles. These rooftop balustrades were their aerial territory, their wind-scoured stronghold. They were the sky gods, or the sky rats, as the media referred to them. They knew every foot of negotiable ground above the streets of Edinburgh's old town, where to assemble, where to drop, where to defend, where to disappear. They could move swiftly and silently, so that people below were lucky if they caught the movement of a cloak or the hint of a weapon, and even the CCTV cameras rarely captured anything better. Those cameras which proved persistent irritants were simply dismantled, and then dismantled again as soon as the engineers had righted them. The columns reached the junction above Lawn Market. Spread below, Edinburgh was a city of contrasts. Medieval, Georgian, and 60s, all shoved together, stirred and flung out, then scrawled over by alleyways, bridges, cycle paths, and tram lines. In places, the buildings had fallen in tight-knit clumps, fighting for room, and in others, great seams of green kept them at bay.